This is the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey. And I'm going to give you a warning here because it's about lunchtime. So our next segment, it's probably going to make you hungry. For many people of Latino communities, the holiday season means tamales. But this is more than a savory holiday dish. It's at the heart of history and culture for millions of families. Joining us to tell us more is Dr. Christian Ramirez. He's a lecturer in the Department of Latino Studies at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
And if you'd like to join the conversation out there, give us a call, 800-222-9455. Again, that's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at the 21st show. Dr. Ramirez, before we get to you, we heard a little bit about tamale making from Albert Lopez. He's originally from Mexico and lives in Illinois, and here's what he said.
All of my family grew up eating tamales, especially the most important date, which is February the 2nd, day of the Candelaria. Some family members also make tamales to celebrate the birthdays, the anniversaries, or even on the ninth day of the wake of a deceased loved one.
Okay, so we're not talking about just food here. This is a cultural staple. And could you give us just a little bit of background about tamales?
Sure, and I should just state that I'm actually coming in from South Texas at the moment, where my family's in preparation of making tamales as we are on the show right now.
Nice.
So some cultural background, and I just want to touch on the cultural impact of maíz, of corn, right? So tamales are a pre-colonial food that survived the Spanish conquest and their attempts to assimilate indigenous peoples into colonial subjects, right? So I regularly remind my students in class that if they're making tamales at home, if their families are participating in this process of making tamales, they're actually participating in a long tradition of cultural production, right? And they're keeping ancestral practices of life, practices alive. This should not be taken for granted. And I think that is why it's also important to have ethnic studies courses that, one, validate our experiences, where we can actually take a seemingly ordinary familial practice and locate its historical and cultural significance.
So let's talk about your childhood and your life and how tamales have been part of your life. Walk us through growing up. You know, was this something that was just prepared for special occasions? You know, when the ladies got together to make tamales, was this a big deal? Did you know that something exciting was happening? Walk us through your memories.
Absolutely. So I think as soon as December hits, you sort of know, something tells you that there's some change, right? As the weather begins to get cooler, you know that tamale season is upon us, right? And so growing up, I grew up in South Texas with most of my family. I would say about 90% of my family still in Mexico, in the northern regions of Mexico. So if we got the opportunity to travel to Mexico, we knew that we were about to have a large family feast, you know, with at least 20 or more of family members. If we were to stay in South Texas, it's a bit more intimate, but the tamales were a staple of our home, right? And the tamales that were a staple in our home may have been and looked a bit different from other families, as we're from the north, right? And Mexico has such a large and diverse geography. And the cultural production sort of changes and shifts as you move to the south and the coastal regions of Mexico.
Excellent point. And to talk about that, we're going to go back to Albert Lopez from Chicago. He sent us a message again, and he talks about that. So let's hear a little bit about what he has to say about his family and tamales.
Because making tamales takes an army, the best memories I have is having all my family members come to my grandmother's house to make tamales. Everyone is helping in some way, either by whipping the masa, stuffing the tamales, wrapping them, or even helping them put them in pots for the cooking process. Meanwhile, we also play games, watch TV, have some adult beverages. My grandmother would also prepare a great big meal for everyone who helped. It was an all-day event.
It was an all-day event, he says. Does that sound like it mirrors your experience?
Absolutely. So he mentioned something really interesting. He said it takes an army, and it absolutely does, right? And so I want to make sure that your listeners know that in the process of making tamales, this is a cultural practice of care, right? So tamales take a lot of time to make, and the process just simply can't be rushed, right? So it's also precious time spent with family at the kitchen table. And as one of my colleagues, Dr. Yomaira Figueroa points out, she states that the kitchen table is a place of politics, of kinship, and sustenance. And this rings true to me, right? So the kitchen table where tamales are being made, you're spending a lot of time with intergenerational members of your family, right? So truths are revealed, ideas and values that have been shifted maybe for those who are coming in from out of town or who are coming back from college, right? Ideas and values have shifted and they're shared at the table. So every tamal isn't just infused with flavor, but it's also infused with discourse, with lessons and love. And that's culture.
That's a really great point. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about tamales on the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, and we're joined by Dr. Christian Ramirez. He's a lecturer in the Department of Latino Studies at the University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana. And I have to say, as a Black woman, I can sort of subscribe to that, the cultural sort of food is the center for a lot of cultures. And so I can relate to that when you say everyone's in the kitchen and it does take an army. Soul food, I guess, is born from the same cut from the same cloth as tamales.
Absolutely. So, and it's not just tamales, right? So for a lot of Latino families, specifically coming from the area of Mesoamerica, corn is so important, right? So the tortilla is very important to our meals. We eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And one interesting thing about corn is that as it developed in Mesoamerica, which is what we would now call Central Mexico, it develops there, but it then takes on long walks and migrations to northern parts of what we now call North America and South America. And so this tradition of eating not only tamales, but corn-based food is really important for indigenous communities and what we now call mestizo or mixed communities of Latinx descent.
Now, we were talking about the differences in recipes. You touched on that. So Mexican tamales are typically wrapped in corn, but when you go to places like Colombia, you can find banana leaves. So what other differences? And I guess it's sort of just making the most of what you've got in your area. Maybe the banana made more sense in Colombia, but talk a little bit about how that varies throughout each culture.
Absolutely. And you're right. I think it varies by the environment around you, right? So the northern parts of Mexico tend to be just a bit more meat heavy. And so we do put a lot of pork into our tamales, chicken, but the southern and coastal areas, such as the state of Veracruz, might not only use the corn husk to wrap the tamale in, but they might also opt to use banana leaves to wrap them in. And it actually leaves them a bit more moist. And I actually prefer that, even though I don't traditionally come from those regions, I actually prefer the southern tamales. But there's also sweet tamales, right, where you could put fruits and other sugary fillings like cajeta or this thickened caramel. And there's also tamales with absolutely no filling. And they're just kind of like the leftover masa. There's also this process the day after Christmas or the day after you're opening your tamales. It's called la recalentada, which just means the reheating, right? So you just sort of reheat them on a stove and they're just a little extra crunchy. And yeah, it's wonderful leftovers.
All right. Out there in listening land, do you make tamales or do you have another Christmas tradition or food that you make each year with your family? We would love to hear from you. 800-222-9455. And I wanted to ask, you know, cultural appropriation is a hot topic. Do you worry about that when it comes to tamales with popularity and Mexican cuisine? Is that something that you worry about?
I think we're already seeing that, right? If you go to most grocery stores in the frozen section aisle, you can find some tamales that have been sort of mass produced. They're really thin, and I don't think they come in their corn husk anymore, right? So they're just ready to heat up. I don't think they're very authentic. I've never eaten one. They don't look appealing to me particularly.
But not when you've had the real thing, right?
Right. When you have the real thing, you can't go back. So they're already out there. I'm not sure who produces these mass tamales, but it's sort of already in process, right? So I would recommend to your listeners, if you can help out your local community and your local tamalera or tamaleros, yeah, this is a small family business who often use the holidays to share, right? When we talk about the cultural practice of care, the cultural practice of giving, that is infused in tamales. So why not participate in something like that and honor these communities rather than appropriate?
Wonderful. We're going to have more questions and more discussion with Dr. Ramirez right after this break. And again, if you have any information or you make or eat or love tamales, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455. And we're back right after this. This is the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey, and we're talking tamales, a tradition for many Latino families around the holidays. Joining us to tell us more is Dr. Christian Ramirez. He's a lecturer in the Department of Latino and Latina Studies at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And we'd love to hear from you. Do you have a favorite place to get tamales? Or maybe you make them with family or have another tradition. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. And Dr. Ramirez, I wanted to ask, so is this a, when and I said earlier in the show, when the ladies get together to make the tamales, that's been my experience. But do the men in your family get involved?
Absolutely. So my immediate family is pretty small, right? So it's just my dad, my brother, and my mom, and myself. So we kind of don't have that option.
It's all hands on deck, right?
All hands on deck. If you want to eat them, then you better start preparing them, right? So there's a rule around here. But when we get together in Mexico, everybody's sort of doing something to help produce the tamales, whether it's actually physically making the, wrapping them up, or taking care of kids, or doing something around the house that's preparing for the meal, right? So it is a very gendered sort of kitchen experience, but the men also are involved insofar as taking care of different aspects of the meal, whether it's side dishes or simply setting the table or getting drinks ready, taking care of kids. And so there is this kinship and understanding that you better be doing something to participate in this meal.
If you want to eat, you got to work, right?
Work.
Let's talk about the history of tamales. Where did they develop, the portability, the way they were cooked? It just seems such like an intricate process. Do we know about the history of where the dish came from?
So it is likely that it's coming from central Mexico or the coastal areas of what is now like the Yucatan Peninsula, with the different indigenous communities inventing ways to sort of pack this food and cook it in their ovens, right? So this is, like I said earlier, a pre-colonial food, right? It's before any type of European invasion occurred in the Americas. And so this is a long tradition that has been keeping alive in our kitchens. And you mentioned something important here, that it's a portable sort of device, right? So as we migrate as a community, we can easily wrap those tamales up and take them on these long walks across the Americas, right? They're also easily frozen food, where we can ship them, even in our contemporary day, ship tamales from any location to North America, right? So in South Texas, we have a place called Delia's Tamales, and they ship them across the United States. It's a very popular restaurant that mass produces tamales, but they figured out some kind of formula where the flavor is very homemade, and that's why they are so popular, because they really do hold on to that authentic familial taste, right, that we long for. And if you're moving to areas that are predominantly white or predominantly non-Latinx, you crave those things, right? You crave your culture, and food is a connecting factor to your culture. So when you find a place that sells really good tamales, That's home.
That's
right?
Home for you.
Yeah. Yep.
You mentioned a little bit about flavor, and I wanted to touch on that. So We're all familiar with the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. In 94, it created free trade between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Now, you say that this actually had an indirect effect on the taste. So how did a trade agreement trickle all the way down to the taste of our tamales?
Right. So that just goes down to thinking about the different types of corn that are available in spaces like Mexico, right? So there isn't just this one generic version of corn. There's multiple variations of corn down in Mexico. And looking at just the color, right? So we're used to corn in one sort of yellowish to whitish color. In Mexico, there's red corn, there's purple, bright yellows and orange, and there's just different colors of corn down there. And each one of those has a different sort of texture to it, a different flavor to it. And the North, the NAFTA, really what it did is created just a homogeneous flavor of corn, right? So it's easier to and cheaper to transport corn from North America, from let's say Iowa or Illinois, down to Mexico than to grow it locally. And so that really stumped the flavor of the different varieties of corn that there are in spaces like Mexico.
Now, you said that you have a relatively small family, but I want to know what the legacy is here for tamales. Is this something that you are confident generations will pass down? Are the younger generations in the kitchen with mom and aunt and grandma learning? What are your thoughts there about as we move forward, keeping these recipes in the family?
I have a lot of hope for this generation that's coming up, right? And technology has a lot to do with that. So yes, these are recipes that are passed down from family to family, from one set of parents to their kids. However, I think that students are doing a really good job of keeping track on social media. So I would say that even something like TikTok, right, showing people how to make tamales authentically in a very short video can have a long-lasting impact, right? So thinking about ethnic studies and how we can take these seemingly ordinary things like social media or TikTok, so to speak, and see, okay, we're actually creating like a time capsule for our recipes, and it's being shared amongst us. So I have the full confidence in today's generation keeping these flavors alive. Why? Because we absolutely love this food. It connects us to our ancestral background and our cultural communities back home in Latin America.
I like that you brought up TikTok and social media. If we're going to get them to buy in, we have to speak their language, right? So.
Right.
Throw it on TikTok or YouTube, and hopefully the tradition will continue. We talk a lot on this show about how Latinos have driven population growth all over the state of Illinois, like we saw with Italian Americans and the food there. Do you think over time, and we're already sort of seeing it, do you think over time the fabric of the culture here in Illinois will reflect tamales? Will it be a part of our, you go to Illinois, they're, you know, famous for tamales. Do you think that influence will happen here?
Well, I think it already has in different areas, right? So there's been a long history of Mexicanos migrating to Illinois from the Bracero program in the early 20th century and to the present, right? So spaces like Chicago and even in Urbana-Champaign, where I'm at, I noticed that there's a flavor in those parts of the state that I haven't found in other parts of the Midwest. So I used to live in Michigan, and we would drive from Lansing, Michigan to Chicago, partly just to get out and about, but also knowing, right? So we were conscious that we were about to enter a flavor zone, right? And so when I moved to Urbana-Champaign, there's a tiendita, a little store called La Mixteca. It's a restaurant. As soon as I ate there, I said, I'm home. I feel comfortable. I think this is a place where I can sort of have my cultural representation and cultural life expressed. And so we look for those flavors. And I think that Illinois is well on track to keep that flavor profile alive.
Wonderful. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about tamales on the 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, and we're joined by Dr. Christian Ramirez. He's a lecturer in the Department of Latino Studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. So in talking about these, when you say everyone kind of gathers around the table and discussions are had, and you know, you might have some tough discussions. Does that include maybe politics, just the normal family disagreement type conversations?
Absolutely. And there's some really interesting dialogue that are happening at this moment, specifically around mental health, right? And what that means in Latinx families. So for a long time, our families have sort of not had access to proper mental health facilities. And even those conversations are really tough to have, right? So the older generations oftentimes thought, you know, persons with mental disabilities or with autism were just simply being, there's a word called chiflado, or just sort of, you know, just being stubborn. And more these conversations are being part of our families. And we're sort of discussing that mental health is an important issue for Latinx families. And there's so many other political sort of issues that are important as well, especially in this past year in 2020, where we got to find out which family members sat on what side of the aisle and what values were important, right? So between mental health and the persistent political climate that we're living in, these were things that were discussed over, especially last year, where we were discovering, you know, who really was who.
Yeah, exactly. And those are important conversations to have. But you don't really think about it, you know, as you're sitting there making the tamales, that you're making some pretty great headway as far as family discussion goes. So that's great. You mentioned some different flavors and different fillings with fusion and other cuisines, say, you know, mixing tamales with an Asian flavor or dessert tamales. What are your thoughts on that in with respect to sort of veering away from tradition? Are you okay with the fusion? Are you okay with experimenting, or more of a traditionalist in the way of tamales?
You know, personally, I'm fine with it. I think that experimentation can cause, you know, some great flavors to come out. But there are probably, I would argue, probably more traditionalists than not that don't really want to mess with what's going on. But, you know, we're seeing so many different types of fusions across the country with different dishes, specifically Mexican dishes in the United States now, and the taco, right? The taco is being infused by different flavors, even the American burrito and that version. It's not necessarily Latin American, and it definitely has an American taste to it, but it is unique to the U.S.
Okay, let's take another listen from our call, Albert Lopez. Oh, okay. We don't have that. He was going to, in the clip we were going to show you, he talked about different ways to make them with pork and with chicken and all different sorts. And I was going to have you weigh in and tell us what your favorite was, because we haven't asked you that one yet.
Absolutely. So my favorite is what I grew up with, is pork, right? So it has sort of like a red chile dye and a red chile that's infused with the meat. And that's sort of my favorite, and also just like a very basic sort of like bean tamal, right? So just your very basic, quick, easy bean. But the beans also have the red chile that's sort of infused into the beans. So it's not like your typical everyday side dish kind of bean.
Excellent. And so where do you get your tamales? You know, just out of curiosity, in the state of Illinois, if you can't get your hands on the homemade ones, do you have a spot that you like? Or spots that you like?
Well, I haven't found any just yet, right? So when I do venture out into the community to look for tamales, one of the things that I do is I look for specific like families that might be making them, right? So I keep my eyes peeled to Facebook and where families might be posting that they're cooking up some tamales for the weekend, right? So you just kind of have to be in the know, and also just through networks of people who might have been in the state for longer than I have. So I recently moved there, so I'm still finding my cultural hubs within the state, right? So I'm keeping my eyes peeled for folks that are selling tamales from their homes, right? Or yeah, from their homes.
That is how I actually stumbled upon them myself. I married into a Mexican family, and when the ladies say they're getting together, you get your order in and you get it in quickly, because they are going to make a certain number. And if you don't get in with that, you just don't get any on that batch. So I'm starting to learn the ropes about when to show up and have your money ready. And it's just a nice group of like five or six ladies. They just spend the whole day. Like he said earlier, it takes an army. And I'm learning the ropes. Get your order in quickly, especially around the holidays.
Absolutely. You got to get in line, and they often come in groups of like 6 or 12, right? So that's typically how they're sold, by the dozen or half dozen. And so, yeah, people have made this sort of like a side hustle for themselves. And that's always, you know, good to see that folks are using their cultural traditions and practices to share their culture and also make a little profit on the side.
And I also learned that you can freeze them.
Absolutely. So I suggest that, right? If you can't, you know, down all your tamales at once, you can definitely freeze them and keep them ready for later.
Okay. Let's see. Down in Texas, do you know how many when your family gets together, a batch is? What's a good batch for your family?
Oh, good Lord. That would be...
Would you say hundreds, dozens, about where?
Depends. So if it's just my immediate family, we'll probably make 100, right? We'll probably make 100 and eat them over between Christmas and New Year's. If it's my extended family, we're talking about several hundred tamales, but there's also about, you know, 15, 20 people producing them, right? So they're also used to share with our neighbors, right? So if we know that there's a neighbor who is sick, if we know that there's a neighbor who may not have relatives in for the holidays, they immediately become part of our family, right? So that's part of the cultural practice of care that tamales can produce. And especially during the time of the pandemic, this is one time where we saw that cultural practice of care really take shape within the Latinx community. For a lot of our undocumented family members, they weren't able to access stimulus checks or other federal benefits.
We are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Great conversation.